Hey everyone, welcome back to the Morning Coffee Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Alexander. This week I'm going to be breaking down the evolution of Christmas and some of the symbolism and ideas that are associated with it. As always, if you guys get anything out of this episode, it would mean the world to me if you would share it with a friend. And if you have the time, since it is the season of giving, if you would head to iTunes and give us a 5-star review, it just helps me get the show out there to more people and continue to do the work in the world that I absolutely love. Thanks again for tuning in. Enjoy the show. So as a writer, one of the things I've become really interested in is the way that stories shape us and give form to the way that we understand the world and who we are as people. And I think it's really interesting to reflect on Santa Claus. Like, how did that become a thing? That's what we're going to talk about today. So actually, the original Saint Nicholas was Greek, and he was born in the late 3rd century, around 280 AD. Now, I must warn you, this story is not the feel-good Christmas story that you probably know of today, but it is interesting to how we got to this place. And something that's worth reflecting on is how good the world actually is right now. Like, if you watch the media and you buy into the divisiveness, of course not. Of course it feels like we're in all-out hell, but that's not true at all, actually. And actually, it was all-out hell for most of the time that humans have been here. And so that's worth reflecting on and considering and maybe just being grateful for. But as I said, the original Saint Nicholas, he was born in the late 3rd century, around 280 AD, and he became the bishop of Myra, which is a small Roman town in modern Turkey. Now, he wasn't fat, he wasn't jolly, but he developed a reputation as this defiant defender of church doctrine during the Great Persecution in 303, where Bibles were burned and priests made to renounce Christianity or face execution. So there was a time in the Roman Empire, as I said, on Monday, where they were pretty liberal in their allowance of letting people kind of worship however they wanted. And then it went through a really bloody couple hundred years where saints were fed to tigers in the Colosseums, and it's really brutal. Actually, while I was doing research for this episode, I realized that modern anthropologists have tried to recreate what Saint Nicholas looked like based on his bones and the stories that they had of him and stuff. And like, actually his face was pretty messed up because he spent most of his life in jail. His nose was like permanently broken. It's a pretty brutal thing. And as I said, you know, the Emperor Constantine ended the Christian persecution in 313 with the Edict of Milan, which basically took all of the Roman Empire and converted it to Christianity. But before that, it was just bloody hell for people that wanted to follow Christianity. And actually, it was called the Way even before that. But anyway, he became sort of infamous. And so on December 6th in the mid-4th century, like around the year 343, he became associated with miracles and reverence for him. You know, the way that saints sort of do become who they are. Over time, they get a little more popular and they get further from kind of who they were as a person. And you see this with many saints, actually. That was one of the things I realized this year. I wrote a paper on Saint Francis of Assisi, and he's really associated with being sort of a mystic and a lover of nature and people. And actually, like, he was pretty depressed and miserable for most of his life. That's not to discount the work that he did and the good that he did, but it is to say that he was a human at the core of who he was, who struggled with all of the things that we struggle with today. And so though we pick up the saints and we look at them as models of behavior, it's worth mentioning that they were still humans that struggled with the same things that you struggle with at a very deep level. But anyway, so after he died, there was more reverence for him, and he kind of became the protector of people from orphans to sailors to prisoners. And so he rose to like real prominence because he was the patron of so many of these groups, like orphans and prisoners and disavowed populations. And, you know, for a saint, a Christian saint, to be really concerned with disavowed populations actually makes a lot of sense, because if you read the Hebrew Bible, one of the things you realize is that the destruction of societies, which happens in over and over to the Jewish people, they're constantly thwarted by their own disaster. But you can actually track that along with their treatment of disenfranchised population. And so Yahweh, the God that reveals himself at the beginning of the Old Testament, basically says, look, like, you have to take care of orphans. You have to take care of the fatherless, the widows, the poor, the foreigners. Like, you have to take care of them. And what's interesting is as societies would stop doing that, you can track that alongside the degradation of their own people. And so one of the lessons that emerges is the fact that if you want your society to prosper, you have to take care of people that need it, that are disenfranchised, that need the help, that need the lending hand. And if you do, then everybody actually wins because we live in a world where everybody wins. And so for a saint to be associated with groups like that is actually pretty common throughout time. So by about the year 1200, he kind of became known as a patron of children and a magical gift bringer because of two stories that had really become popular about his life. In the better-known tale, three young girls are saved from a life of prostitution when the young Bishop Nicholas at the time secretly delivers three bags of gold to their indebted father, which can be used for their dowries. And so essentially they were being sold into prostitution. And so that the story is that St. Nicholas gave them gold, which rescued them from having to pay off this debt. The other story, it's not as well known, but definitely worth thinking about. It came in the Middle Ages. Nicholas entered an inn whose keeper had just murdered three boys and pickled their dismembered bodies in basement barrels. And the bishop not only sensed the crime that had happened, but he resurrected the victims as well. And that's one of the things that made him the patron saint of children. And so those two stories like kind of became more and more popular. So for several hundred years, from like 12 to 1500, St. Nicholas was the bringer of gifts and the toast of celebrations centered around his feast day, which was actually December 6th. Remember, in 343, that's when he became popular. And the saint took on some aspects of like other early European deities when he did become really popular, like the Roman Saturn or the Norse Odin, who appeared as these white bearded men and had magical powers like flight. And he also ensured that kids towed the line by saying their prayers and practicing good behavior. And so this is something interesting. One of the things that we do as people all the time is we anthropomorphize the world, which means we look for human qualities in things that are not human. And you might think about this like, you know, say a mom wants her like little girl to clean her room. And so she'll say something like, hey, God really wants you to clean your room, or hey, Santa Claus really wants you to clean your room. Now, that's not true, right? Because what happens is you want her to clean your room, but you don't have enough internal authority to sort of stand on that. And you're not really that good at conveying what you actually need from people. And this isn't I'm not trying to talk smack in any way. I'm just trying to say this is actually how these things happen. And so around the year 1500, this St. Nicholas person who was like a rescuer of children, he actually became the way that like people would get their kids to do stuff. And so it's like all of a sudden the gifts were not freely given. They were now ransom, essentially. So parents started using this figure to tell them like, you'll get your gifts, but you have to be good. And so we see that in our in our society today. But then in the 1500s, the Protestant Reformation began, right? I'm not going to go through the Reformation. I probably will do stories on it because I studied it a lot this year, and it's a very interesting tale. But anyway, so the Catholic Church started splintering, and people started having more autonomy over their own faith. And when that happened, this St. Nicholas figure sort of fell out of favor. And that was a problem, right? Because now parents had been using him to get their kids to do what they wanted to do, essentially. And so then what happened is that the job fell to baby Jesus. And the date got moved to Christmas rather than December 6th. Because remember, December 6th was when we would celebrate St. Nick, the original Greek bishop. But now it became baby Jesus. Now, the problem is baby Jesus can't give you gifts because he's a baby. And no kid's going to believe that, right? You tell a four-year-old like, hey, baby Jesus is going to bring you gifts. They're like, no, he's not. Like, he's a baby. I have a brother. I know he can't bring me anything. And so then what happened is that these interesting, scary figures were based on St. Nicholas, and they were thought of as like a sidekick to baby Jesus to bring them gifts. And so some of them were Rue Claus, that was one of them, which kind of roughly translate to rough Nicholas. Another one was Ashenkles, which is ashy Nicholas. And then another one is Pels Nickel, which means Fury Nicholas. And so these figures expected good behavior, and they forced children to suffer the consequences like whipping or kidnapping. And so you see this darkness motif kind of coming back in here. And so now St. Nicholas became this really pretty dissimilar thing from the Jolly Man in Red with the beard and the whole thing that we understand him as today. It was more like this horrific figure that would bring you gifts, but also force behavior. And what's interesting is that's how the whole world was, right? That's why I think the world's so much better now, because look, we can believe what we want to believe. We can talk about what we want to talk. But back then, it was like, no, you're going to believe this, or we're going to burn you alive. And that happened all the time. The Catholic Church burned people all the time. And so it's worth understanding that the things we have today should be cherished, you know, they should be celebrated. So then this kind of brings us up to where we were, we started on Monday. So maybe I should have done this episode before, but essentially that didn't stay super popular. So then Christmas fell kind of out of popularity, but it retained some of the dark elements we talked about on Monday. And then it actually was in the early 19th century, as we talked about with Charles Dickens, like he wrote the classic A Christmas Carol, but tons of poets and tons of writers started reinventing Christmas. Because when the holiday actually got to early America, it wasn't anything like what it is now. It was actually like shunned in New England because it became this like alcohol-fueled, rowdy community blowout, basically. And then because all of these people shunned it, kind of threw it into obscurity, and then the poets and the writers like basically reinvigorated this idea. Washington Irving wrote a book in 1809 called Knickerbocker's History of New York, where he first portrayed a pipe-smoking Nicholas soaring over the rooftops, flying with a sled, delivering presents to good girls and boys, and switches to bad ones. You know, we gotta maintain the switch, of course, geez. And then in 1821, there was a anonymous poet who wrote a poem called The Children's Friend, and it went much further in shaping the modern Santa that we know about today. And so that's where we have the appearance of Santa Claus, and they take in the magical gift bringing of Saint Nicholas, stripped him of any religious characteristics, and then dressed him in the furs of those shaggy Germanic gift bringers from the original one. And so what we have here is the evolution of this bishop, this Greek-born bishop of Myra in the Roman Empire, who spent most of his life in jail, was killed as an enemy of the state, and now is what we celebrate as the person that brings kids gifts. It's very interesting how we got here. Anyway, that's the story of the original Saint Nick. I love you guys. Have an amazing day. We'll talk later on Morning Coffee. First flake of snow.